C1AP, number 15A.
We still are in the tone of love. In the Christianity order, we started with the tone of love when we have taken that passage, and I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation, and then ended with that sentence, woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea. And we have seen that the Revelator and then Mrs. Eddy in her explanation presents the standpoint of love from two different angles. One is the science of love, the other is how love forces everyone to attain salvation, even if the method, the way of suffering is needed. So there is universal salvation, but for us naturally it is a question that we would like to see that way in science but not through suffering, and therefore we must also watch our consciousness that we are led in the way of science and not of suffering. So at this point Mrs. Eddy picks up the question, what could cause suffering? And parallel to it, naturally, what helps to go the way through science? So we come to the next verse, Revelation 12:13, on page 569, line 29. And when the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. You remember that first the dragon came and was watching the birth in order to devour the child, and then the child was saved and was brought up into heaven, that the idea was brought back to principle. Now he is trying to devour the woman and persecutes the woman sense. So we can see here that Mrs. Eddy would now explain what is the danger for the woman sense, not for the idea, but for the woman sense. That woman sense which can care for the idea, watch over the idea, protect the idea. So her explanation is on page 570. I can read it rather quickly. You see at once the issue. The issue is right in the marginal heading, apathy to occultism. So this quality of apathy to occultism is that which wants to destroy within us the woman sense. That sense which can watch, which can protect, which is always awake and very awake and always right on the dot so as to protect the idea. She says, the march of mind and of honest investigation will bring the hour. It's quite interesting how from now on you can watch how very often that imperative command is brought out in terms like will or shall. As never before in the text, this is comes out. Why? Because she knows that love is forcible, that love enforces salvation. If we are not going along gently and naturally, scientifically with the idea, then love will show itself as very forcible on the human mind. So she says, will bring the hour when the people will chain with fetters of some sort the growing occultism of this period. So, in an interesting way, Mrs. Eddy defines really that which goes against the woman, which tries to devour and to persecute the woman, is occultism. The occultism and the growing occultism of this period. How she could say that at her period, if we compare it with our period, if she would have written that today, we could have understood it very easily. It seems at the time she was writing, the trend for occultism was very insignificant compared with the trend towards occultism, witchcraft, black magic, white magic, all that kind of thing in our time. So one can see how she was foreseeing what was coming 100 years before we experience it now in its full swing. She could see that the whole world is turning towards occultism. They have seen, or the age has seen, that material science and natural science cannot bring salvation. That becomes more and more evident today. And then we have the swing to the other extreme, that people begin to get interested in spiritualism, hypnotism, magnetism, in parapsychology, in kinetics, in psychokinetics, in occultism, witchcraft, all these things. They are now all over the world, especially in the Western world. This is the very opposite of the womanhood sense. That womanhood sense which says, I'm only entertaining the divine idea. And occultism goes and entertains mortal mind, and cultures mortal mind, and nurtures mortal mind, and mortal mind processes. Then she goes on and says, the present apathy as to the tendency of certain active yet unseen mental agencies will finally be shocked into another extreme, mortal mood, namely into human indignation. And you have one extreme follows another. So both apathy and indignation are qualities that have nothing to do with true motherhood sense. It's the apathy, to be watchful like a mother. It is the indignation that cannot see the ever presence of ministering love, that indignation which wants to use human will and willpower to solve the problems of today. More and more all the practices of willpower are en vogue. To say en vogue, they are really in. And so she can see that whole field of mortal mind and the practice of mortal mind, either as apathy or indignation, is actually leading thought into the occult. Apathy is leading into the occultism because human thought can manage and maneuver and guide and influence apathetical thought very easily, and can become the instrument of willpower very easily. So if we consider that the problem that is facing us today and in the future is actually occultism, and if we want to see how we can counteract that, I think the only way we have is that womanhood sense. I wanted to say something and now I just forgot it as I was talking. All right, it'll come back if it's important. Then the Revelator goes on and says, oh yes, Mrs. Eddy doesn't interpret every verse of Revelation here. We had just taken verse 13 and she goes to 15, but the verse 14 is quite interesting. Verse 14, I read it to you, says, And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle. See, the eagle was always a symbol for science in the Old Testament and the New Testament. The wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time, you have again the three and a half, from the face, away from the face of the serpent. See, that's the only thing we can do as a woman, when really that whole influx of occultism seems to flood our consciousness and seems to flood the Western world now, and tries to subjugate the whole Western thinking, which is not trained in the mental disciplines. If we want to help to save that situation, which is a very dangerous situation, because it's a mental situation which cannot easily be perceived, which cannot easily be detected, because it's hidden, it's secret, then there is only one thing we always can do, namely to go into the wilderness, to flee into the wilderness on the wings of an eagle, not of a lamb, not of a calf, not of a lion, but of the symbol of science. A symbol of science is that the bird, the eagle, has two great wings. And that has always been the symbol for the first three and a half, namely understanding, and the second three and a half of demonstration. On those two wings, really the eagle flies, which says, if we have two wings, we are safe, and we can go into the wilderness and feel safe. Really, that sense that we understand through mind, spirit, soul, the principle of being, but because we have another wing, a second wing, we fly on that wing of principle that always says, I'm life, I'm truth, I'm love. And so we go into the quietness of our own being, into the wilderness, we turn away from the whole impact of mortal mind and of the mental influence, and are still within us, and then we are contemplating what being is. And so she was nourished for a time, times and half a time. We are nourished then. We are not starving. Then we feed our thought with the divine principle that always says, I am at the helm of everything. Though the empires fall, the Lord on high reigneth. That principle says, I reign. And I am going to reign as life and as truth and as love, so nothing can harm you. Nothing can happen to you. And I think this is important, especially at this time, to know that we are not falling into apathy, but that we are awake. You know those prophecies of Mrs. Eddy for the year 2000, 2050, that she said, it is a question if the world will burn up in fire. It all depends if Christian Scientists are awake or asleep. If they learn how to handle the dragon, that whole chapter, the 12th chapter of Apocalypse, seems to be the center of her prophecy. It has reference to her age as the woman that brings forth the idea. It has reference, as she says, to the 20th century and the 6,000 year period, where the question is, shall the earth survive or go up in fire? She wasn't saying 100% nothing will happen. She was saying something is going to happen, and the question is, what are the students of Christian Science going to do with this science? And her point was, are the Christian Scientists apathetical or awake? This is the point where she brings up here the danger for the woman is apathy, apathy against occultism. That we are not watching what's going on, that those webs in the minds of people, in military wise, in political wise, in economical wise, are weaving always new webs and webs. And the question is, are we awake to what is going to happen? And we know it is a difficult period, as never before. And there is apparently no way out. Nobody can give a way out. With whomever one speaks and whoever one hears on the high level, the end is always, actually, we don't know the answer. Because they don't know science. But we know it. And therefore the responsibility is to a great extent on us to watch. And not to think we are not many mighties. We are many, many mighties. Because great is the idea. It does not depend on people, on number of people. He said, great is the idea, not great is the number. Not great is the number. We are not impressed by the 600 million or 700 million Catholics, are we? It doesn't impress us. Well, why should we impress by any other number? That's just the point. Occultism says the more mortal mind we can gather together, and the more this mortal mind can be brought to the point of thinking, the more powerful it is. It isn't. Only the idea has power. So we don't need to be afraid of mortal mind. We don't need to be afraid of that occultism. Not to be afraid of psychological manipulation, of psychological influence. That we shouldn't be afraid as Christian Scientists. As ordinary human people, we should be afraid, because we don't know how to handle that mortal mind influence. But as Christian Scientists, we shouldn't be afraid, because the one mind is mightier than all the billions of human minds. And there we can see, the moment you see a Christian Scientist who is afraid of psychological influence, of thought transference, of thought manipulation, you know that he hasn't understood the first thing about Christian Science, because he believes that thinking and thought is power. It isn't. It has no power whatever, if we see the idea. This is the difference between metaphysics and science of mind. If we crown mind as the Messiah, we don't have to fear any metaphysics. Of whatever kind. This is, I guess, what she wants to show here, and says, flee into the wilderness. When you see the floods of mortal mind coming up and welling up and tries to give us fear and to try to make us shudder of that what can happen or might be possible to happen, I guess it is good always to draw back into the wilderness and feed our thought for time and times and half a time with life, truth and love. Then the Revelator goes on and shows in verse 15 and 16 in the textbook, and the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And the earth helped the woman. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. Actually, those who have been reading Revelation since 2,000 years and have been using it as a prophecy, they always would try to interpret the present historical situation into the prophecy of Revelation. Like Nostradamus, for instance, that he tried to prove through Revelation practically every war that was happening in Europe and every crisis that was happening in Europe and every epidemic in Europe, because he didn't know at his time America. He was trying to see in everything that Revelation says the proof for what was happening in history. So the danger naturally today is also that we take the apocalyptic situation in our world today and try to say, well, here it has been prophesied already in Revelation, and we can always find somehow an interpretation for that. So that's a danger. And yet, especially as we read this here, one can't help seeing that this has to do with the present age. Why? Because actually, up to this present age, there was never that woman sense that could bring forth the man child as science. That has never happened in history. That happened in our times. And when the Revelator is talking about that woman that brought forth the signs, Christ, the Christ signs, the signs of all sciences, the signs of the signs, as it has been shown through Mrs. Eddy and John Dorley at our period, which has never been shown before, one really can feel it has to do somehow with our time. And then here it is said, and the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. But then something happened, and the earth helped the woman. Something has helped that idea. And I think we can see that we were trying to help that idea that it is not going to be swallowed up. We are giving our love to it, our attention to it. We were, all of us who love this science are trying, are belonging to these millions of unprejudiced minds that try now to see the idea, the bigness of the idea, the power of the idea, try to see the dominant power of that idea. That idea stands on two very firm feet, on the left foot and on the right foot, and that it handles latent error and it handles visible error. Somehow it shows that we are aware of it now, that we have been awoken to it now. Whereas in earlier times they tried to interpret this idea historically, we see the spiritual import of it and interpret it spiritually and not historically. And therefore we can see the important message that this revelation gives to us. And don't think we are not many mighties. Why should it come to us? It must come to someone. And that we have been chosen is just one thing for which one, each one can be grateful and say, my word, what a grace. What a grace. I didn't earn it through the works, I got it through grace. Why have I been led to this idea? Why are you sitting here? Have you ever thought about it, why you're sitting here and why the other millions are not sitting here? Did you earn it through works? I didn't earn it through works. I was an ordinary boy, you know, just as you can read it in any boy story, huh? Just doing all the things that one shouldn't do. Yeah, so I certainly didn't earn it. Yet, apparently there was something in me that was receptive, namely the womanhood sense. And that womanhood sense can be there where the little boy does all the things he shouldn't do. It doesn't disturb it. The idea is never dependent on the human. The idea never works on the merit of the human, always in spite of the human. Don't forget that. Religion has tried to say only if you are a goody-goody you can get somewhere. It's not true. Paul has not been a goody-goody, but he did a job. And so it is true of many. It's true of Zwingli, it's true of Luther, it's true of all those people who have done something in spiritual line. The idea works in spite of the human. But when one has been touched by it, it's a great responsibility on our shoulder. We have to show that you are worthy for it, of it, and not to let the idea drop into the sand. And the earth helped the woman. Can you see how John Dolly helped the woman? He wasn't instrumental to be the woman, but he helped the woman in a wonderful way. And we can do that too. So we don't have to look out into the world where the millions of unprejudiced minds are. Let's just look at our own mentality and say, do I belong to them? Am I the one that tries to culture that idea, to devote oneself to that idea, to be completely concentrated and committed to the idea? Or do I just take it and I drop it after a while and take it up after another month and drop it after another half year? Am I lukewarm or not? So millions of unprejudiced minds, simple seekers for truth, even weary wanderers athirst in the desert, are waiting and watching for rest and drink. Give them a cup of cold water in Christ's name.